Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Hour two is here, and of course, hour number two of the Gabe Kuhn Show is presented by the Memphis Showboats. Get your tickets now to see the Showboats at Simmons Bank, Liberty Stadium at UFL.com, or call 901-341-7008. UFL.com or call 901-341-7008 to go get those tickets. Three of the last four games at home, and $2 hot dogs and $2 beers. You can be blessed with those if you show up to Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. But without further ado, let's bring on David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer at CBS Sports on X at David W. Cobb. David, happy Friday, man.
Happy Friday to you as well, my friend.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Doing well. I'm actually watching Tennessee Vanderbilt, first game of a big SEC baseball series at the moment. It's that time of year where I'm like, I guess I'll
why not?
You know,
Yeah.
Pay attention to college baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. We're transitioning to the summer. The NBA playoffs they're night games. So, during the day, especially when you're on paternity leave like you are, you got to find something to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You got to find your sports.
Yeah. Not to discount the reality of daddy daycare. Like, I'm putting in work over here.
Of course. Man. No, I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to, step on your toes, make you feel
have
less
you, Have you had your time yet? Have you had, like, any weekdays at home with the baby? Like, anything like
that?
Oh,
of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's it going for you?
Like, I have a well acting son. He's hanging in there. The teething though, he's teething right now. That's been a little bit of a struggle. I don't know if you've dealt with that with Rosie yet.
Is real. The thing we had to figure out recently was the fast release bottles, because we're sitting here taking 45 minutes to complete a feeding, and it's like we just had to change out the bottles to get it to where it would release faster. Game changer.
Hey,
game changer.
Philips Avent. That's my favorite bottles. Just sidebar.
Yeah.
Philips Avent. I have like a million of them. I just re-up every time I can.
Nice. Can I get some of those at Oxbow, or like where do you?
Oh,
just
them? Go to Target. Just go to Target. I don't think you can go to Oxbow. I don't think you can go to Oxbow. Although they do carry a lot of stuff. They do carry a lot of stuff there. All right, now, I have to ask you this off the top. We have Pablo Torre over at Meadowlark, Dan Lebatard's sort of media arm, talking about North Carolina football and Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick's relationship. And he says that Jordan Hudson, amid all of these allegations and all the craziness with the CBS Mornings interview a couple Sundays ago, he says that she has been banned from showing up to North Carolina the athletic facilities, football, and otherwise. North Carolina had a chance to respond. They said that she is allowed, and even though she is not a employee, she still can show up. Now, Pablo Torre then said, well, North Carolina can say what they want. I stand by my reporting. Should we push the panic alarm on Bill Belichick and the North Carolina experience? I know we haven't seen a game played, but where are you at? Should we be concerned about what's happening?
I mean, yeah, we should have been the day they decided to hire a 73-year-old coach with no relevant college coaching experience. And this Jordan Hudson thing just brings to light. I mean, we're not talking about 2007 Bill Belichick here. We're talking about a guy that's as old as Mack Brown, the coach they fired because he was too old. And at least Mack Brown had won a college football national title, and I get it. You can say, look, Bill Belichick has all these Super Bowl titles. Yeah, well, he also had Tom Brady. I mean, he also had a very well-defined collective bargaining agreement and a well financially stocked franchise right behind him. I mean, so you look at North Carolina, where do they fit in the college football hierarchy? No better than 30th, maybe, when you look at the SEC and the Big Ten schools and then some of the other ACC and Big 12 schools that historically care a lot more about football. So, like, I mean, we are putting a lot of stock in the football mastermind and the football wizardry of a guy that is well past his prime, as he showed amid his decline in the final years of his time as the Patriots head coach. And so now you add in all this personal life stuff. I mean, what do the players think about this, Gabe? What do the players think about this guy having a girlfriend who's 50 years younger than he is? Like, to what extent is that going to, like, cause them to honestly just kind of not take him seriously? And I think that's the sad part of where we are right now with Bill Belichick. It's like, I don't think anybody really takes him seriously at the moment. So in that respect, like, if I'm Bill Belichick, the season can't get here fast enough, because that's my chance. When we step on the football field, that's my chance to show the world that, like, here's why they hired me. And I think it puts the pressure on him, too, to, like, actually go out and put up results in year one. You can't have a 5-year rebuild in college football anymore, let alone when you're already starting the job in your mid-70s. So I think all this situation does is just ratchet up the pressure to an unhealthy level on Bill Belichick.
Well, I will say, you know, in the locker room, I don't think the players will care that much. They probably just think he's a player having a 24-year-old girlfriend when he's 70-something. But also, if he coaches them well and coaches them to win, I don't think all that much matters. Curious though, like, when you look at their roster, it's not bad. They brought in Gio Lopez from South Alabama. Obviously, he's taking a step up in competition, but he's a damn good quarterback. Was wanted on the transfer portal, and he's recruited relatively well. I'll give him that. But again, like, I'm just with the Patriots. He never really had anything like this. Just like these off the field stuff. Yeah, they had the cheating allegations and everything else, but nothing quite as nasty as this has become.
Oh, I mean, this is just, and it's personal. I think that's what's different about this. The Deflategate, it wasn't personal. I mean, Robert Kraft had his issues that were personal to Robert Kraft. But, I mean, so rarely over the years did the Patriots dynasty ever center around Bill Belichick's personal life. That's what's awkward and kind of weird about this, is that it's uniquely personal, and it makes us question – I mean, I'll say it. It makes us question the acumen. It makes you question the wisdom and the sort of decision making of a man who is, past his prime. That's where I'm at on it. It's like, you read some of the details of the sort of real estate empire that his girlfriend is assembling. Presumably, the inference being off of the wealth of Bill Belichick, and it's like, man, it just doesn't. This situation just does not pass the smell test. And you're right, man. He's recruiting well. Like, and that was sort of a given. But I'll also say this. Like, Mack Brown also recruited well there. So, and it never really panned out. The defense in particular was always a disaster under Mack Brown. So, you know, it's just like, what is – to me, the results were already going to have to be really good to justify running off Mack Brown when he had them – semi-competitive every year. They were going to win 8 or 9 games and go to the Mayo Bowl or whatever. And, you know, I mean, I understand people want more than that, but I mean, I don't know how much more than that is realistic at North Carolina.
Yeah, and then they have the succession plan with Steve. This is going to be interesting to watch. I'm tuned in. At the very least, I'll say this about North Carolina football. We'll care and we'll watch more than we have in the past, at least for year one, to see how it goes.
No, absolutely. In some ways, it's, I mean, vastly different coaches and personalities, but it's almost like a Deion Sanders effect, to where, like, you are so clearly defined now by your head coach. Whereas under Mack Brown, I mean, I would actually argue they were defined by their quarterbacks. They were defined by Sam Howell. Yep. They were defined by Drake May. And Mack Brown was a character, but not the main character oftentimes. And now it's Bill Belichick is the main character, for better or for worse. And right now that's for worse.
All right. Now, Ross Dellinger from Yahoo Sports, friend of the show, is reporting that a 16-team college football playoff proposal has been put forth. The way that this is, you know, is being proposed, four bids, automatic bids for the SEC and Big Ten, two for the Big 12 and the ACC, group of six would get one, and then there's three at-large spots. And this is the other part that, is a, little bizarre, interleague play-in game. So the, big conferences could potentially pit their third-place team versus their sixth-place team and their fourth-place versus fifth-place to play in to the college football playoff. How do you feel about this proposal?
It's interesting. I don't really know why the SEC or the Big Ten would feel compelled to agree to an automatic bid structure. Like, if you go and ask like Lane Kiffin and or go
they
and
don't
read
like
or listen
they
to
they want it all at large.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think that would be to the benefit of the SEC and the Big Ten. And, of course, there would still be a couple of at-large spots in this 16-team proposal. But if you're the SEC, you're the Big Ten, the most you could get in the 16-team playoff combined in a best-case scenario would be 11. Whereas, like, I think the coaches in that league would argue, man, we've got 13 or 14 of the best teams every year.
Yeah.
And in all reality, we're probably going to get nine, you know, in a given year. I feel like that's my whole thing with this all these changes that feel like we're trying to get to in college sports right now, the playoff, the House settlement, the College Sports Commission formed by President Trump. Like, we're trying to make all these changes 15 years too late.
Yep.
Because the reality is the Big Ten and the SEC have the power. If you wanted to make changes, you should have done it 15 years ago when the early signs were there in terms of conference realignment with Texas A&M going to the SEC and Missouri going to the SEC, and with the Big Ten growing and expanding to add Rutgers and Maryland. And that was the moment when we all should have realized, okay, the Big Ten and the SEC are throwing the old model out the window and moving this thing in a strictly business direction. And that was the time. That was the time to make the playoff and to create a new structure in college sports. Not now. It's like now you're going to ask the Big Ten and the SEC to relinquish power that they've worked really hard to accumulate. And so, I mean, if I'm those leagues, man, I don't know that I love the idea of boxing myself into, you know, four, maybe five bids at the most, when you've assembled a 16-team power league, an 18-team
right.
power league in the Big Ten's case, and you're only gonna cap yourself at maximum getting a third of your teams in. I don't know, like that just doesn't quite make sense to me from the standpoint of those leagues. But you know, I personally know there's some kinks. I don't have any huge problems with the 12-team format. Maybe we should erase the automatic buys, but like or the automatic. You know, bids for the conference champions and whatnot, but man, I don't know.
That's
like,
my question, David. Is this necessary? It doesn't feel necessary. And they talked about a 14-team playoff before. Why 16? Why jump to 16? I just don't understand.
And then it also penalizes those teams that have earned themselves the right to have a bye. Whatever your criteria is for earning a bye, whether it's winning a Power Four league or being ranked in the top four. You know, now you don't have any advantage anymore. Like, yeah, you probably get a home game in the first round, but, you know, so do the top eight teams. So, like, you know, you forfeit some of your advantage for being one of the best teams, and then you got to play in the first round. You got to play the same number of games as every other team in the bracket. So that to me is another disadvantage to this system. Is it you want to talk about de-incentivizing the regular season, which is the whole problem everybody had with playoff expansion? Well, this just takes that to another degree, another level. I mean, there's even less incentive now to care about the regular season because screw it, we can be the 2 seed or the 7 seed. It doesn't matter. We're gonna have to play the same number of games, and we'll be a home team in our first game anyway. So to me, there's less incentive here to care about the regular season. 16 teams get in. You can see a Georgia, you can see an Ohio State, a team like that really let off the gas in November, and I don't think that's what anybody wants.
Now, while we're talking about the evolving landscape of college football and college athletics in general, there was a report yesterday from John Canzano. He does radio and is long newspaper writer in Oregon. Of course, he's very plugged into the Pac-12. When they had 12 teams, certainly, but now that they have seven, he's all there. He did say, he brought this up about the University of Memphis and where they could land in this whole thing. He brought up the idea of them being a football-only school in the Pac-12.
Yes.
How do you feel about that idea? And I mean, to be honest with you, how do you feel about the idea that everybody's throwing out there of football-only in the Pac-12 and then potentially go to the Big East for basketball and everything else?
Sign me
yes,
up.
Yes, I'm with you.
Sign me up. That would be phenomenal. Because the The problem with joining the Pac-12, from my point of view, was never football. You can do 4 cross-country football trips in a year. You can probably afford to fly charter for those. I mean, the problem with joining another league is the midweek, late-night basketball games, the grind of that. Go ask Mick Cronin how much he enjoyed being in the Big Ten this year with UCLA. Not very much. Same for Eric Musselman. I mean, they were unhappy with all the travel they had to do, midweek games across the country, not to mention your non-revenue sports as well.
Yeah, volleyball and golf and everything else, yeah.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And like, it's not like most of these Big East schools are around the corner from Memphis. It's not like, you know, you're going to Jonesboro and Hattiesburg. But at the same time, man, going to play DePaul, going to play Creighton, going up to you can fly into the New York City metropolitan area and then be within a 2-hour bus ride of, you know, half that league.
Yep.
So it's a lot more practical to be in the Big East from an every other sport perspective than it is to be in the Pac-12. Not to mention that is like a destination league in basketball. I mean, yeah, it hadn't been as good as the Big 12 or the SEC the last few years, but I mean, that's a league with some super strong basketball brands. I mean, UConn, Creighton, I mean, it's loaded from a basketball standpoint. So you get in there from a hoop standpoint, you're golden. You get in the Pac-12 from a football standpoint, you're golden. How practical is that? What, you know, the logistics of that financially, what does that all look like? I don't know, but John Canzano put that out there, man. I think that would be a wonderful outcome for Memphis.
I would absolutely love it. It's inventive. It's like it's just getting around the ACC and Big 12 not wanting to add teams right now. It's just an inventive way to go about this. And if Ed Scott can make that happen, I'm all for it. And maybe if you were football only in I don't know if you could be in 3 leagues at a time, but I think that, you know, the idea of football only in Pac-12, basketball only in the Big East, and then, you know, go regional, Sun Belt for the rest of the sports, I think that could make sense.
Gabe, I'm glad you said that, because, like, I don't want to be, like, insulting towards the non-rev sports, but that makes a lot of sense for baseball to play Arkansas State and Southern Miss and Monroe instead of playing these, you know, whatever American schools. Like, That makes a lot of sense, and I think college sports as a whole would do well to model something like that in the future. And so, like, if there's anything that I hope this Presidential College Sports Commission can come up with, it's actually some of the ideas that one of the committee members has put out there. I mean, Cody Campbell, this mm-hmm. billionaire Texas Tech booster who's going to be on this commission, he's not just on it because he's wealthy and, you know, he's a big face for a big program. He's in it because he's actually put forth some pretty good ideas, you know, in the last decade or so, former player himself, about how to reconstruct college sports. And so that is among them, is to regionalize the conferences, at least to a certain extent. And if you could do that for your non-revs, that makes a lot of sense. And then have your, you know, your football maybe in more of a cash-oriented system. And, you know, and for Memphis, you get into the Big East for basketball, it's a win-win-win.
Yeah, and John Canzano also reported something that makes me want to get this program, this athletic department, out of the AAC even more. He said that they are, you know, thinking about going and getting Air Force, so they would have all the academy schools. Can we stop that? Could you imagine playing a football season and you have Army, Air Force, and Navy on your schedule? 3 triple option teams? Because that
honestly
would be possible.
Like a nightmare, but
that would be horrible.
At least you would get good at defending it.
I guess, but you'd have, I mean, your injury list by the end of the year would be insane. All the damn cut blocks.
Not to mention, if you even have a scout team anymore in this era with all the walk-on cuts, like you would literally have to go recruit guys who ran the triple or ran the wing T in high school. Like, hey, come here. We need somebody who knows how to run this, because we're going to literally spend half of our practices devoted to this.
Now, here's something fun that we got the news of yesterday. A 6-year deal for Louisville and Memphis. We're renewing the rivalry. I'm glad Louisville came to their senses. Now Tennessee, you're up next. Come on. But that's really cool. And Pat Kelsey and that team, they could be a, you know, top 20, top 15, top 10 team by the time that game is played next year in the out of conference.
Yeah, no doubt. That's another big scheduling win for Penny. And the fact is, like, he continues to put together really good schedules. He continues to put together competitive rosters. You know, I'm just gonna keep throwing that stuff out there, because that stuff matters. Like the ability to schedule, the ability to attract talent when you have certain financial limitations. Like those things are really important. Now, one NCAA tournament win throughout the course of his tenure, you know, that should be stated as well. I don't know that that's the only thing you can define Penny Hardaway by. I think you also got to look at the way he schedules and the way he assembles teams. And I think those are two big pluses in the, you know, evaluation of Penny Hardaway as a basketball coach. So, yeah, I mean, Memphis versus Louisville, that's fantastic. Like, that's something that you and I kind of grew up on, you know. I mean, back in the day, that was a marquee matchup.
Yep.
I just think about flashback to the days of, like, Francisco Garcia and, like, Rodney Carney and, you know, back in those days, right? Like, some really good battles between those teams. So I'm glad they're getting back to that.
What really matters, though, and this is why it matters and why you keep mentioning it, is the way the Memphis brand in basketball has fallen off since Cal left and all that. You don't get these games scheduled unless you have Penny Hardaway as the coach. That is something I will stand on. I don't think you get
because
these games
the brand,
scheduled
the
without
Memphis
him.
Memphis brand, he elevates the brand. You know, I mean, for better or worse, the Memphis basketball brand is Penny Hardaway, kind of like we talk about the North Carolina brand at the moment being Bill Belichick exclusively. I mean, the Memphis basketball brand is Penny, partly due to a lack of roster continuity, which is pretty common in this era. But yeah, I mean, if you just have an anonymous sort of head coach there. You got Ron Hunter, no offense, Ron Hunter,
right.
Good coach. But, like, you know, it's just it's not the same. You don't have the same pop. And so, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on that.
All right. Now, David, I know you're not an NCAA waiver expert or enthusiast by any stretch of the imagination. But we're looking for the Dane Danger waiver, and he's applied for it. It's already in. The paperwork's submitted. John Martin pointed out yesterday from the Jason and John Show and from the Daily Memphian, he pointed out that Malik Thomas at San Francisco – you know, put in a waiver to get another year of eligibility. He played 4 years, but only appeared in 9 games as a freshman. He got the extra year. The NCAA has allowed it. Is this a good omen or a good sign to potentially getting Dane Danger back for another year?
Well, no, I saw him put that out there, and it's a good point. It's a potential data point. But then I saw Kevin Sweeney clap back and was like, well, Dane Danger left Baylor of his own accord in what was, I guess, his sophomore season at the time there. And so it wasn't like it was a medical redshirt situation. And so, yeah, you know, even though he only played in 3 or 4 games that year, his redshirt freshman year at Baylor, since he left of his own volition, the NCAA might look at it differently. Here's how I look at it, though. I look at it and I see a guy who's played 3 seasons of college basketball in an era where most guys are getting 5. Mm-hmm. And so when you also include the reality that his true freshman season at Baylor was the COVID year that did not count against anyone's eligibility, you know, I think because he was on campus and participating in college basketball during that COVID year, I don't think that true freshman season should count against Dane Danger. Mm-hmm. Most people are going to look at the next season. Like, that's what Sweeney is doing. He's looking at the next season and saying, well, he left Baylor of his own accord. It wasn't a medical redshirt situation, and saying he should be disqualified on account of that. But when I look at it, I see a guy who's played 3 seasons, and yes.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
His 5-year clock has technically expired, but I don't think that applies to Dane Danger because it didn't apply to anybody who was in college basketball during that 2020-2021 COVID-impacted season. So most guys who are around in that season, they've got 5-6 years to complete their clock and play up to 5 seasons. And so since Danger's only played 3, since he was on campus and participating in college basketball during that COVID season, I think he should get that last year back. That's how I view it. I think that's how anyone with common sense should view it, especially given how many guys have played 5 years amid the COVID cycle. I don't know why Dane Danger should be penalized for the fact that, look, he's only played 3 seasons. Yes, he left Baylor of his own volition midway through that season, but he didn't log a single game of action during his true freshman season. That season didn't count against anyone. I don't think it should count against him.
If they get him back and the waiver request is granted, You think some AP top 25 love is due? You know, considering this roster plus Dane Danger on it, who averaged 15-8 last year?
I could imagine Memphis getting others receiving votes in that scenario. I don't know that they'd be in the poll.
It's a continuity thing. Continuity thing. You have to see it.
Well, yeah. I mean, Danger would get you votes. If you don't have Danger, I don't even know if you're going to get votes. Not to say they couldn't get there. I still think it's a talented roster. You're one more big away at that point from you know, consideration. But, yeah, if you have Dane Danger, Doug McDaniel, and some of these other players they've added – you could get some votes. You could get some top 25 votes. It's but I'd still be surprised if they were actually in the preseason poll, just off, you know, getting Dane Danger back.
Right. Okay. We'll see. But David, I appreciate it, man. Enjoy your weekend.
Okay, brother. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports, and he's brought to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday by Oxbow. Oxbow is loaded up with fresh gear for guys who don't sit still this summer. First up, you got Poncho, their best-selling fishing apparel line, built for the wild and made for those who chase adventure. And also, they have events all the time. You can go to shopoxbow.com, check their event schedule, but I'll tell you about them. May 23rd and 24th. Oxbow's teaming up with Milwaukee Boot Company for a two-day event celebrating rugged craftsmanship and boots that don't quit. Then, on top of that, May 29th and 30th, they'll have the Mizzen and Main Trunk Show. They'll have giveaways, warm weather staples built for comfort and style, and don't miss their newest arrival, some shoes, Wolf and Shepherd, where athletic performance meets dress shoe polish. These shoes, Rob Gronkowski, wears them, and Gronk, you know, he's definitely pushing them out there for you. They're sleek, they're sharp, comfortable enough to run a 40 in. Sizes are up to 15. And plus, in time for the Laker Beach, get a Yeti cooler. They have Yeti, all you need. They have cups, coolers, koozies, all there in Yeti. And when you buy a cooler, buy Yeti at Oxbow, or buy a cooler in general, you get free ice for life. Instead of going to the gas station, always buying those bags of ice, you can go to Oxbow, just show them that you bought it there, and you can get free ice for life. Oxbow is anchored in Memphis. Go to 964 June Road to see them in person or online at shopoxbow.com. That's shopoxbeau.com. Now it's time to talk some 16-team college football playoff. There was a proposal today that Ross Dellinger reported on. I want to discuss it next. If you like the 12-team college football playoff, that's too damn bad. College football people behind the scenes that make these decisions want an expansion. And today's news comes from us, from Ross Dellinger at Yahoo Sports, friend of the show. A potential 16-team college football playoff bracket has growing support within the Big Ten and SEC after an in-person meeting. The way that this 16-team bracket sort of shakes out, four automatic bids for each of the SEC and Big Ten, and then the ACC and Big 12 would get two automatic bids. One automatic bid goes to group of six, and then you'd have three at-large spots. Now, if you have the question like I did about Notre Dame, you just go ahead and read Ross Dellinger's piece. Notre Dame, as long as they finish in the top 14, they would have an auto bid as well, which is kind of insane in the grand scheme of things, but I also think it's insane to expand right now. I got to be honest with you, before we even get to my issues, I enjoyed the 12-team playoff, Connor. Did you?
I thought it was great.
I thought it was fine. I thought we got down to the final three games of the year, and they were all great. They were all good, the two semifinal games and the national championship.
There were a couple blowouts, but I thought that overall for the first year,
if you have a first-round game and a 16-team, an 8-team, a 4-team, right, you're going to find blowouts.
Yeah.
It's just, it happens. Now, to the issues. I don't know if I fully believe that there's enough growing momentum in the SEC and Big Ten to actually pass this through. And the reason I say that is because of the auto bids. You're cornering the SEC and Big Ten into four auto bids each, when the other conferences are clearly below them. I think when you look at Lane Kiffin, you look at multiple coaches around the country in the Big Ten and the SEC, they don't like the automatic bid thought process because they feel like all their teams can get in as long as it's at large. If you go look at the final college football playoff rankings from last year, there were six teams from the SEC in the top 16 of the country. And that would put Ole Miss in. That would put South Carolina in. Alabama. So, like, I don't see where a guy like Lane Kiffin is going to bend the knee and allow this to happen, because he does not like the automatic bid process, and they feel like, regardless, you know, it works against them to have auto bids, because they would have had six teams and a 16-team college football playoff so long as there was no automatic bids. That's the biggest hurdle to me when we talk about this proposal in general.
I think I would also be worried about schedule. I mean, Ross Dellinger talks about it in here, but the SEC, they were already complaining last season that because of their conference schedule, that it makes it more difficult for their teams to get in because they're having to beat up on each other, and it is the hardest schedule in the country for a conference to have. So what's going to happen to out-of-conference games? Is it going to just become a bunch of cakewalks? Are we never going to get any big matchups anymore?
Just have a bunch of FCS teams that
right,
you pay?
So is the SEC going to make sure that they're better teams, the teams that make the most money, are scheduled the easiest in the SEC to guarantee that they're going to get into the college football playoff and make sure that they're in position to get the bid? So I just think that there are a lot of issues with expansion to a 16-team playoff. I understand the money of it, but again, yes. It's kind of the same conversation that we've been having with college athletics, it feels like, for the last few years. Every single conversation we have about something that's changing, we said, listen, we understand the money and that the money would be more and you can make more money.
But does that mean it's better?
But is it better? No, and it feels like every step along the way, it hasn't been. It's taking away the pageantry. It's taking away some of the history. We've quite literally lost one of the historic conferences in the Pac-12. It's just gone now. And what's crazy about it is that this is really two conferences holding a ton of power with ESPN.
And it's taking away from the end-of-year wins and losses. You could lose three games in the SEC or the Big Ten and still be there. You could lose a late-season game like Ohio State did to Michigan, and you're still fully in the field, and you ultimately win a national championship even though you had two losses in the regular season. You don't get penalized as much. Now, I think there's, you know, some comeback to that. Like when we look at some of the championship games, some of them didn't matter, but some of them did mean a whole lot. It really lifted up. I thought the Big 12 championship was nice. The ACC, seeing if SMU could keep it close against Clemson to see if they got in over Alabama. I thought some of those things, you know, worked the other direction where we did have some late meaningful games. But, you know, game to game, losses don't mean the same as they used to, as they once did. Now, here's the big part that I think a lot of us will look at is just like, okay, now we're doing too much. Dellinger also previously reported that there could be, with a 16-team proposal for the college football playoff, interleague play-in games, meaning at the end of the season you'd play an extra game, so your third-place team would play your sixth-place team, your fourth-place team would play your fifth-place team to play in to the college football playoff if you have those automatic bids. That's too much. It's too much. Because how often is it going to be where some of these teams had the team they're going to play on their schedule previously, they beat them earlier, so you're telling me that game that they won didn't mean much and you have to play them again to
just
get in?
Wouldn't matter.
It's stupid to me. It's stupid to me. I don't like a whole bunch of rematches as is, but if it's a rematch of a couple of teams in the SEC or Big Ten that already played and one team already prevailed, I think that's cheap to the team that already won and put themselves in a good position.
Well, like, could you imagine a situation where it's Alabama-Auburn, one of the biggest rivalry games we have in the SEC, and they play early in the season. It's like, well, okay, so
game of the season.
Yeah, but is that game just going to be played for, like, home
and then Auburn and Alabama
now?
Could you imagine a situation they play in the Iron Bowl and then the next week they have to play in the 4 or 5 matchup?
Like, so okay, so they're just playing again and the actual rivalry game didn't actually matter because this one's the one that actually matters to try to get into the college football playoff. It would essentially just be playing for home field.
It's stupidity to me. And also with the 16-team playoff, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of reason to be a top 4 seed besides, like, you know, potential home field advantage because you'd still have the home games or just getting a more preferential spot. But, like, the byes, is there, according to Ross, I didn't see anything about bye games or anything like that. So, or bye weeks. So this is just, to me, we're doing too much. And I understand that, you know, you expand, you have more games, you have more money. And ESPN wants that. But in the end of the day, are we really doing what's best for the college football postseason? No. I think it's an overwhelming no. And I think there's some things in this proposal in general with the automatic bids, with the play-in games that are just non-starters for a lot of people around the country. I get you want to create intrigue. I get you want more games. I get you want more inventory. But it's just we're going way too far with this. I enjoyed the 12-team playoff. I don't know why we can't continue to go down that road. I thought it worked out really well. Best team prevailed. They had to go through four games of just, you know, unbelievable top 10 opponents. Like, I don't see a need to change. The necessity isn't there, yet we keep going down this road.
I don't think that there's a necessity for a 16-team playoff. Like, the 12-team playoff, I think, worked really well. There are some changes to it that we probably need to make. It was not perfect, but I don't think that expanding it to 16, when you're really alienating everybody except for the Big Ten and the SEC and ESPN, when everybody else would be against it, that doesn't seem like the direction forward for me. It doesn't make much sense. The only real reason to do this is power and money. Those are the only two reasons to do that. It's not trying to make football better. It's not trying to make college athletics more exciting. The fans, again, I think would be left out. It makes these rivalry games, it makes the schedule during the regular season not as important as it used to be, and it already feels like those are kind of losing importance as we go on.
God, the more you expand, I mean, the bowl season has already lost some of its luster, even though people watch, but like these bowl officials, I'm really good friends, of course, with Harold Grader, who joins me during the football season.
Right, exactly.
It just becomes so much harder on them. You're alienating them in a big way the more teams that you add. It's just much change too fast, and we always necessitate more change when it doesn't need to happen.
It is interesting, though, because it does seem like everybody outside of the top two conferences is really against this. And in this piece, you can read that people are coming out against it. And I will say that even some at ESPN sounds like they have some apprehension about a format that would make a lopsided automatic access to two conferences, which is exactly what this is doing. And that's why I think that somebody in the Big 12 said, we want to make sure it's not an SEC invitational. And that's kind of what it would turn into.
Can I be the one to say it too? Did the Big 12 deserve two teams in the college football playoff last year? Probably not. You had Arizona State get through, but did BYU and Colorado, were they deserving? Or Iowa State deserving of getting in there? Like, I know we're talking about the bigger conferences, and the Big 12 would have exception to only getting two to their four.
Right.
But, like, does the Big 12, do they deserve two like that? I mean, it's ridiculous, but we'll see how this proposal ages. Now, SmokeSlam 2025 is coming to you next weekend down on the riverfront at Tom Lee Park here in Memphis. It's the world's ultimate barbecue showdown. It is back. May 15th through the 17th, 75 teams competing for the biggest purse in barbecue competition history. $250,000 is on the line. So that's going to be fun to watch. And you're going to be able to eat all the barbecue you want, bring the kids out. They'll enjoy the barbecue. Best barbecue makers in the world at the best barbecue fest in the world. But beyond that, bring the family out because you'll have a big old Ferris wheel, fairground fun, fireworks, book signings. They can meet people. Should be very great there. And then the music lineup. Shane Smith and the Revivalists, Big and Rich, country music legends going to be there. The Revivalists, Southern Avenue. They'll have a bunch of different musical acts. Three-day passes and single-day tickets are on sale now. They're going fast. Go to smokeslam.com. And if you want to pony up a little bit more and have a VIP experience, guess what? Available as well. So if you want the three-day passes, single-day tickets, or VIP experiences, hit up smokeslam.com. It's May 15th through the 17th at Tom Lee Park on the riverfront in Memphis. One more segment left in the day. One more segment left in the week. We'll get to small talk and get you out of here and send you off to Cavs versus Pacers Game 3 immediately following. But stick around. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, we just got done talking about the changes, potentially to college football, with the college football playoff going to 16 teams. But we do have, from The Athletic, a change or proposed changes by the Basketball Rules Committee regarding men's basketball. I think the biggest thing from this, though, is the switch. There's growing momentum, positive momentum, to moving the game from halves to quarters. And if you say no to that change, I think you're absolutely out of your mind. I don't really understand your logic. We play quarters in every major basketball league around the world. FIBA rules 4 quarters. NBA rules 4 quarters. I am fully for this. We've talked about it on the show before. Go to quarters right now. That should get through immediately.
Yeah, it seems like the only real pushback anybody has to this is, well, there will be more commercials. And it's like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Well, and I also think the other pushback they have is the fouling rules. The way it would work is 5 fouls per quarter. 5th foul would trigger the bonus, the 1-on-1.
I've never really understood why college basketball does halves when every single basketball,
including women's college basketball,
does quarters. It makes the game flow better. And the number one reasoning it seems like behind this is, if a team gets in the bonus with like 10 minutes left in a half, your team is kind of screwed.
Yeah.
And it will help the flow of the game. I think that it also just helps players get ready for the NBA more.
Because yes, that.
It makes way more sense to be, if you're college basketball and you're going to be the pipeline to the NBA, you should probably have the same rules as the NBA. I also think they need to look at the shot clock. I've never understood why the shot clock is so much longer than it is in the NBA. They need to adopt the NBA's rules. It'll make the game flow better. Yes,
or FIBA's rules without knocking it off the rim.
We might have some more commercials, but I'm going to be honest. I can live with more commercials if the games flow better.
Yes, I'm fully four quarters. It just makes no sense that they've stuck with halves this entire time. And if you're one that's like, well, just stick to the way things are, I'm sorry, I'm not here. I'm not here with you. College athletics changing every day. This seems like a minimal change compared to some of the things we have seen lately. Also, though, this is where I'm gonna maybe get on a soapbox for a little bit. They want to do one coach's challenge. They're trying to pass that through. We already have so many reviews. I guess it's only one coach's challenge, and you don't get another one even if you're successful. And you'd lose a timeout if you lose it. But like, we have so many reviews that have already made this game at times unwatchable, especially as you get to the late moments of a game. I don't want to see the coaches have a challenge. I'll be the one to say it. I think it's ridiculous how many stoppages, how many reviews we have as is in college basketball. Adding the ability for a coach to go make you look at something just does not do it for me.
And if you're going to add this rule, don't do what the NBA is doing, where you can miss something in real time, and then because of the replay, you could do an approximate foul. That drives me absolutely insane. When they're like, we want to review an out-of-bounds play, and they're like, well, there's a foul here. What are we doing? What are we doing?
I'll be the one to say, like, drives me crazy. The reviews where it's barely nicking off the middle finger of someone. Like, I don't think sports were meant to be played that way, and decisions were meant to be played, like, to play out that way. I'll be that guy, sound like an old man, but some of these overturned calls, it's like, I don't know. I feel like you should stick with the
original. I don't mind getting a call like that, right? It can be annoying when it's like the fingertip was the last thing that touched the ball. It can be annoying, but I can live with that because at the end of the day, it's the right call. What bothers me is when, like, for instance, it happened a lot of times with the Grizzlies this season where Jenkins would challenge something. He would challenge something, and then they would be like, well, there's actually a foul here. And then, like, Jared would get hit with a foul out of nowhere, and you're like, that's not what I wanted. Replays for?
Yeah.
And what's crazy about it is that they can give a foul.
That's the equivalent of in like football if they went to go review and there's a holding call and they just like, you know.
Exactly.
Throw a holding
call. Yeah, and they're like, oh, no, there was a hold.
We're challenging a catch and it's like, oh, the right guard held.
Well, it's like, but that was not what I was challenging. Yeah. That rule I have a lot of issues with. If you miss it in real time and a coach is challenging a foul, they're challenging that foul. You can't add a foul on top of it. I don't understand that.
All right, now we're going to head to the weekend in just a moment. Do you have any good weekend plans, Connor?
Oh, I'm chilling this weekend. Chilling. I think I'm going to chill this weekend. I might go to the drive-in again. I went to the drive-in last week. That was fantastic. I think I might check out Grind City Brewery this weekend as well.
Yeah, I love their space down there.
Mother's Day? Mother's Day's on Sunday. Shout out to Mom.
I'm going to have a lively Mother's Day. My mother's in town looking over Myers. And then also my mother-in-law has been around. And, of course, Taylor's a mother. I'm gonna have my hands full coming up on Sunday.
I'm very much looking forward to spending Sunday with my mom.
Love you, sure. Mom. Absolutely. And everybody, go get a gift.
Go get a gift. If you don't have a gift yet,
celebrate your mother.
What are you doing? Look yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
Go get some flowers at least.
100%. But that's a wrap for today. I want to thank you out there for listening. I want to thank my wonderful guests today, David Cobb and Josiah Johnson, for their contributions to the show. We'll meet back here at the same time on Monday. We'll have some NBA playoffs to discuss. We'll talk about your Mother's Day. All of that fun stuff. In the meantime, we need to pass you off. We have some NBA playoff action right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. We're going to pass you off to Game 3, Cavs versus the Pacers. The Cavs really need a win. They're down 0-2, even though they were a 64-win team. Doesn't happen very often, but they could get some injuries back on the floor, Darius Garland and otherwise. But for Connor, I'm Gabe. Be easy, be safe, and enjoy your weekend.